Hey there. My name's Tim. Welcome to The Table, the podcast edition. The Table's a community that exists to make room to explore what we believe. What you're about to hear is an edited version of something that we call the Talky Bit. We're sharing it with the hope that it can be a positive catalyst and encouragement to you in your own explorations. In our experience, exploring what we believe can sometimes be hard work, and we don't think anybody should have to do that alone. We're able to offer this because of the generous support of donors both within and beyond a local community. If you want to contribute to keeping it going, you can find information about how to do that at thetablewinnipeg.com. Thanks for dropping by. Welcome to the Talky Bit. So the conversation about justice isn't a new one, and the conversation about love isn't a new one. And the conversation about the intersection of those things is not a new one. But we keep having the conversation, naturally enough, in different settings, right? Different contexts. And we are having our 21st century conversation about these things in a context where, as we were reminded last week, hate is cheap. that it's easy to be positional these days, and we are surrounded by a milieu that make it easy for us to broadcast our position. We'll talk about this more another time, but the difference between positions and interests is essential in this conversation, that if we start talking about our interests, the things that move us as people to do what we do and believe what we believe, if we start having that conversation with one another, it doesn't take us very long before we usually discover that we have some common interests. And that is actually the productive ground for conversations about, among other things, justice. Because almost inevitably, when we start talking about with one another as human beings about our common interests, one of the things we discover, more often than not, I believe, is that we love some of the same sorts of things. I don't like the word things there. We love in some of the same ways. We love and care about, are interested in the well-being of some of the same sorts of categories. One of those categories tends to be people that we love, right? Most of us, if we are fortunate at all, have someone or someones that we love, that we care about. And maybe it's a particular someone. I think that's lovely when that's true. And even if that's not the case, if we stand back a little bit, it's usually many someones, isn't it? That we love life, and that we love that there are other people in the world, that we are not here alone. And if we keep talking about common interests long enough, I think usually we end up in a space where we agree that we would like people other than ourselves to thrive, that we have a wider interest in the well-being of persons. And then, of course, we are promptly at that point, I think, hard up against the dilemma of who do we want to thrive and why? And are there those that we do not wish to thrive? Perhaps that we even wish harm? That we wish we're not here? That we would do in if we had the means, or if we were sure it wouldn't come back on us? Then we come to that dilemma, don't we? And then we're at, in big terms, we're at the intersection of love and justice, right? What I want to do with that this morning, and I don't want to take a bunch of time with this, we're not going to have a sort of facilitated discussion around this today, we will another day, because I want us to have time to enjoy the food that people have brought and to feast together, and we can talk about whatever we want while we're, you know, enjoying that time together. But I want to read from two very different sources this morning. And so most of the voices from this point on will be other people's voices that I'll share with you. One of those people I've mentioned before in this space, Kai Cheng Thom. Kai is a Chinese-Canadian trans woman. She'll tell a little bit of her own story in the intro to the book that I'm going to read, which I've also referenced before, her most recent book, Falling Back in Love with Being Human, Letters to Lost Souls. So a little bit from her, And then a little bit from a Canadian explorer, contemporary explorer, a person who has just recently finished a six-year solo, primarily solo journey across the continent on the Trans-Canada Trail, self-powered all the way across the country. And she has some thoughts about our connections to one another as well. So I'm going to read those two pieces for us. We'll just sit them side by side without a lot of commentary, and then we'll eat together and think and talk while we eat. Also, a long-standing human tradition. Kai dedicates the book this way: "For all the monsters." I know her definition of monsters. Give me a minute. "For all the monsters who are still waiting to be loved." That's the dedication. And, of course, includes herself. You'd have to sort of read the whole definition, but includes herself. This is her foreword. "Dear reader, have you ever wondered how human beings can be so contradictory, so cruel and depraved, yet so capable of kindness, all at once? Have you ever struggled to hold on to these multiple truths, to your faith in the possibility of human goodness in the face of all the chaos and conflict that we inflict upon one another? I suspect you have, dear reader. Me too. I've never been a stranger to ethically troubling situations. I grew up as a Chinese transgender girl in a hostile world, and my career has always brought me into contact with the harsher side of human nature. In my adolescence, I was an activist. In my 20s, I was a sex worker and then a psychotherapist. In the past few years, I've been a conflict mediator and a spiritual healer. In each incarnation of my professional life, I've pursued the same deeply personal mission: to witness the essential beauty and goodness that lives within each and every person on this planet. To live in the knowledge that everyone is both worthy of love and capable of loving. To embrace the revolutionary belief that every human being, no matter how hateful or horrible, is intrinsically sacred. Although it's been a long time since I was part of any organized religion, faith has always been my solace and my guide. Not faith in any particular God, necessarily, though I was raised in a syncretic mix of Buddhism and evangelical Christianity, and both the Buddha and Jesus hold tender spots in my heart, but rather faith in other people, faith in the transformative power of the bonds between us. Of course, my faith was tested. Isn't that always the way? The trouble with people is that, unlike gods and bodhisattvas, we are only mortal, and so destined to disappoint and even harm one another. In the past few years, I experienced some deeply personal losses and witnessed some deeply disturbing violence. In the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic and climate change and cancel culture, people seemed to be treating one another with a viciousness that threatened to shatter me. It wasn't just my world that was falling apart. It was everyone's. So I wrote. I wrote as though I might be casting a spell or chanting a religious litany. I wrote as though poetry and prayer might mean the same thing, as if words might reconnect me with what I once considered my unshakable relationship with the human divine. I was intrigued to encounter in Kai's writing and thinking this notion that poetry and prayer might be the same thing, and also to hear that exact same word idea and almost those exact words in the person that was our sort of online guest last week. I wrote to summon the language that might help me fall back in love with being human. I wrote my way through the question, what happens when we imagine loving the people and the parts of ourselves that we do not believe are worthy of love? Which, if you sort of dug into the rest of the book, you'd find that that's a pretty succinct summary of Kai's definition of monster as well. What emerged was a series of love letters to unexpected people and places, to the parts of the world and my own self that I thought were beyond saving. Yes, dear reader, this is a book of love letters to dead people, to exes, to prostitutes and Johns, love letters to weirdos and monsters, to transphobes and racists, to everyone and everything I have ever had trouble holding in my heart. I needed to know that I could love them, because that meant I could still love myself, as hopeless and lost as I had become. From the depths of my rage and despair, I needed to find my way back to love. This book is my act of prayer in a collapsing world, my devotion to the belief that we are all intrinsically sacred, my bridge back to hope. I hope it can be yours, too. Yours in love, Kai Cheng Tham. Then I want to read you one of the entries from the book itself, which is called To a Lost Sister. I stopped writing poems for a year after it happened. I didn't believe in them anymore because they didn't save your life. I'm not a praying woman, but poetry has always been my hotline to the universe. I guess that somewhere deep inside, I hoped that if I said something elegantly enough, it would come true. That if I spoke the language of beauty, maybe God would finally start listening. Are you there, God? It's me, fucked up transsexual with a savior complex. I'd like you to turn back time. If I could just go back once, I'm sure I could change the past for the better. Did you know that the word abracadabra comes from a Hebrew phrase meaning, through speaking, I create? I bet you do. My magic was never strong enough to manifest the miracles I wanted, to turn back time, to undo harm, to make the unspeakable things safe to say, to catch a spirit as it flies out of this world and weave it back into the body it left behind. What's the use of writing poems if they can't even do that? I wish I could talk to you. I've been wanting to tell you that complex PTSD and a crisis of faith have so much in common. They're both about losing trust in the world in the wake of unbearable loss. Grief tears us away from our faith, but it's grief that brings us back as well, because in our deepest grief, we have nowhere else to go. The Buddhist part of me knows that in the paradox, enlightenment is born. When you fell through a crack in the world and disappeared, I started meditating again. I lit candles every night. I tied a red rope around my waist before sleeping, anything to give my grief somewhere to go. For a year after it happened, I dreamed about getting lost in mazes and screaming without a voice, knowing that no one was coming to save me. But the Christian part of me knew that the secret of grace is choosing to believe. The secret of resilience is the art of surrender. I wish you were here. I'd tell you all the things I've learned about hope and forgiveness and holding on while letting go. Our world keeps breaking over and over again. I have no choice but to believe that a new one is being born. She has a little homework assignment throughout the book that I'll come back to at the very end and offer to us as something to do that's in the spirit of that hope that Kai is talking about. The other article, nothing like Kai's work. Kristen Schnelton is the person's name who did this journey. Kristen describes herself at the beginning of the journey as somebody whose life was sort of in transition. Relationship had ended. Her dog had died. Her career was at a crossroads. And her mother had always loved the Trans-Canada Trail and had supported it. And she was like, I'm just gonna go find myself on the trail across Canada and set out. And has made a film about it that if not out yet, it's coming shortly. Anyway, I want to tell you, read you just a little bit of the beginning and sort of end of this particular article. Because in some ways, this is about what it's like to do the thing that Kai is talking about so poetically, to actually choose moment by moment to do the sort of work that they're describing. It's late fall, deep in the dense bush of northern Ontario. Well into her third year trekking the Trans-Canada Trail, filmmaker and adventurer Diane Whelan, sorry, I got the article and the explorer's names backwards there, awakens with a sigh in her frost-covered tent. Stiff and bruised, she prepares herself mentally for what's ahead. Another day of cold water paddling, another set of arduous, frigid portages. Outside the zippered door, however, that prognosis becomes far worse. So remember, I'm reading you this as a metaphor. What was yesterday a choppy inland lake is now a solid sheet of ice. In the forest, 60 centimeters of cement-like wet snow encases everything. Overwhelmed by her predicament, a stunned Whelan thinks, holy crap, what are we going to do? A paper map and satellite phone offer a sliver of hope. Her cousin could plow his way through a closed road that intersects with her route only 8 kilometers away, but from her frozen-over campsite, reaching that potential rescue seems impossible. For this leg of her trip, a 1,200-kilometer paddle with 168 kilometers of portages, stretching from Thunder Bay all the way into Manitoba, Whelan has enlisted the help of a friend. That one-in-a-million kind of friend who can easily step away from life for a few weeks and will enthusiastically carry 20-kilogram dry bags across multiple laps of a 4-kilometer portage. A friend who, serendipitously, also packed an axe. And it may have been a tiny token axe meant for little more than splitting kindling, but it proves a godsend. Zip tying it to the end of a ski pole, Whelan's friend sits in the bow of their canoe, alternately chopping the ice and pulling the canoe forward, while Whelan, having switched from her usual double kayak paddle to the wooden one she carries in reserve, chops and paddles from the stern. Every second, there is the danger of capsizing into icy water. If you're curious to know what that looks like, there's a cover of the lead photo on the article is here. You can check that out later. It's as grim as it sounds. As if that weren't enough, the storm has rendered the portages virtually impassable. The sheer weight of snow on tree limbs has bent and collapsed many of them, freezing them into place like an icy web of tangled rebar. It takes, brace yourself, 7 days of chopping and schlepping to travel those 8 kilometers. One swing of an axe, one heave of gear, one brutal slogging meter at a time. She ends the article talking about the ways in which we need one another. And also about learning to just let things go and stop and wait, and how that is the way so much of nature works. She's talking about the film that's coming out, which is called 500 Days in the Wild, bracket, a wildly underestimated title chosen early on in the trail, because it took 6 years, not 500 days. Whelan will wrap up a decade of her life dedicated to a single project. She thinks of both the journey and the film as pilgrimage, one with 3 themes, adventure, reconciliation, and healing. And here's the quote. It's a film where a person who is overwhelmed by the world today, so that's resonant with Kai's description, finds hope and meaning again, mostly through connection and the realization that radical individuality is actually an illness in our society. She goes on to say, it's something I romanticized most of my life, but now I realize what a crock of shit that is. We all need each other. Here's Kai's homework, and I'll leave us with this, and then we'll eat and hang out together. She just pops them in the book. There are these little pages with a lot of negative space, right? And a little something to do. So here's the little something to do if you should, your mission, should you choose to accept it. Write a prayer of hope on a piece of paper and leave it somewhere for someone else to find. What makes this a brilliant assignment is I don't know who will find it. If we do this the way Kai is suggesting, we don't get to know who we're praying for, who we're hoping for. We don't know if we would like them. We don't know if we would think of them as a friend or an enemy. We don't know if we would think of them as a support or a threat. Right? If we do that. If you think about that assignment for a while, at least for me, it's kind of like, am I going to do this or not? You know, like it's not a no-brainer, right? It's really not. All right. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I'll let these other voices resonate for us and take us where they take us. Peace.